there are two sets of issues to discuss, as I see it. One is, what should the direction of our intellectual agenda be from here on in this, in the discussion of this and the related themes, if we are to continue? And by what instrument? Not necessarily by discussions like this one, by some other forum. So both the substance and the tool.
Do you have a candidate answer for that?
For which?
But both those questions.
No, I think one of the sources of trouble is related to something that Simon said about metaphysics. So we're walking here in a kind of invisible space between two intellectual situations. One is, there are just the disputes of the particular disciplines, biology, cosmology, and so forth, social theory, compared to one another. And there's nothing beyond that. And the other is, there's some higher space of metaphysical inquiry from which we can look down on all of these disputes. And I take it that the main line of the discussion is, we're trying to deny both those propositions and say we don't believe in the metaphysical space, but we also don't think that we're just locked into the particular disciplines. And that produces all sorts of interesting complications. I think that's just a revelation of the general situation of thought. And that's not a reason not to continue. As far as I'm concerned, that's a reason to continue. But it intellectually, it raises the problem of how we're to define the agenda. So I think what we empirically did here, or ended up doing empirically or experimentally, was we had two sets of agendas. We had a set of agendas coming from particular disciplines, and then we had this quasi-metaphysical agenda, and we somehow tried to smash them together, to collide them in some way. And out of this has emerged now, I think, the beginning of a way of talking. We've clarified different senses in which laws can change, and the relation between change of law and conceptions of time and causality. But I think that to go forward, we couldn't just continue doing what we did this time. It wouldn't work. And we would have to have a much more ambitious entrance into particular disciplinary disputes. And that in turn then raises the question of what the format should be. Because after all, we're just an arbitrary collection of people. And to make that work, it seems to me, we should expand and vary the composition of the group, and not necessarily meet just by getting together around a table, but in all sorts of other ways. So I don't know.
You know,
I very much like the characterization that you've made, neither one or the other, neither the ghettos of fields nor the metaphysics. But then once we're talking about this other way, I think there are kind of two levels, right? One is atmospheric. It's a sense that people who worry about the same thing and have a similar agenda against a certain kind of determinism talk to another and feel warmer across fields because they hear that they have the similar agenda, and there's some echo there. and it creates a peer feeling and a real kind of self-reinforcement on all sides. That's what I call down atmospheric. I think what we're getting at now is the much more specific operational question, which is, you know, are there ways in which fields can help other fields? And I think we've only touched that because we've done it by intuition, by recognizing that different languages can actually connect and that somehow there's some intuition in biology that might work for social science, etc. But I think we haven't quite grappled from the point of view of social science specifically with to what extent and where can the hard sciences help us in the social sciences. Yep. And here, I mean, I think, first of all, there's really a fundamental distinction, which you started off with, between ontology and programmatic. We've mostly been doing is trying to analyze the features of world that cannot be analyzed through specified by laws that are unchanging. Okay, now, then we try to see if these worlds somehow have some common features in various disciplines. But the programmatic dimension is, you know, what can the specification of such worlds in the sciences help us recognize what features in the social world will make it more likely that the potential for evolving world happens. I would call it kind of pre-adaptation friendly. You know, can we create social worlds that are pre-adaptation friendly, that really actually do put, you know, gerund on television, but for social purposes. So I think that's already a rather important focus, you know, specification, that is, can we identify, from the social science point of view, features that can inspire our thinking in societal design.
But I think it's away from the main focus, which has been here. That would take us in the discussion of a programmatic debate about society.
But the ontology can help in that. I mean, it's not. It just shouldn't be left unspoken. That's. But can I add just one other point here? The other, you know, when I was telling the discussion earlier. You know, I think it's quite clear that in social science there are, of course, the big metaphysical and epistemological debate, but mostly social science is all about defining sets of laws and not trying to specify meta-laws. And it's really about not understanding what happens in between, even in the minimalist Marxist sense that Roberto was describing, but it's about recognizing when we are under different sets of laws. And here, when you were talking about without meta-law, you know, a very, very weak meta-law is only one that helps us recognize, how do we recognize that we are under another set of law, which is actually, I think, a very key agenda in the social sciences. The one that is about changing logics, changing world, is usually left to history. You know, and here we could discuss whether it's because complexity is too high or because simply you couldn't specify it. The same discussion would be relevant, but as a matter of fact, that's what happens. So it's this recognition of change, which also I think is, you know, another way of saying what is relevant to social science. So I think part of the onus on the social science side of this discussion is to specify what is most useful in that debate.
So I like that, but I'm more ambitious, right? Although that's not unambitious. And let me put it in my understanding in the most embarrassing terms. What we have to say to each other amongst these different areas we brought together, I think, is the following. We are representatives of fields which are believed to be foundational for humans' understanding. Biology, cosmology, physics, mathematics, philosophy, social theory. Our several disciplines are in crisis. We happen to be people who are both influential to some extent and out of the mainstream of our field, which is an interesting position to be in. Partly, I think, because we feel the crisis more acutely than other people. Maybe I'm being presumptuous, but this is what I feel. The fact that there's something to, first of all, it's a discovery that there seems to be quite specific things to talk about. It's a discovery that this issue of, these issues of, is there a notion of evolving law without meta law, among the several other issues we've discussed, feels like it's key to possible resolutions of the crises in these different areas. And therefore, it's not just that it's, you know, it's sort of an entertaining diversion, or it's fun. At least this is what I was thinking when I went home yesterday. The various things that we discussed yesterday have been things that have come up in our work, the work of myself and the people that I work with in physics and cosmology. But what the discussion focused on, in my mind, was that these issues are at the core of what's not working, and B, that there's no way out except what appears to be a frighteningly radical way, that is making sense of that blackboard.
But just taking the evidence of these, of this day and a half of discussion, I see at least the four following themes emerging from the discussion for further inquiry. The first is how we are to accommodate thinking historically and temporally within the mathematical and logical language that has been the main instrument of natural science. The second is how we can have a general way of thinking about time and causation that takes seriously or gives meaning to the idea of time going all the way down. The third is how we can make sense of this qualified conception of laws without meta-laws that satisfies those two conditions that we put there on the blackboard. And the fourth is how we are to think of biological or natural historical thinking in relation to physical thinking on the one hand and social historical thinking on the other. Now, it seemed to me that of these four issues, the one that is most directly a bottleneck to further advance is the first of the four. And that's the one on which many of us in this group...
Say again, which one was the first one?
The first is the anti-temporal, anti-historical character of mathematics and logic. This poison gift of mathematics to science. So that would seem to me to be in the strategic order the first issue to address. But it is the one for dealing with which some of us are least equipped. And remember Goethe's wording that one of the rarest of human qualities is the admission that the things that one is best at are not the most important things. So it would be, I think it would be unfortunate if the agenda of the work were shaped by our particular equipment. Yeah. So it seemed to me that that's the first set of issues to address. And I'd like to come as a participant to see it on video or something, but I couldn't participate in the discussion.
Yeah, so certainly it would be good in whatever. Let me get away and preface, say something if it doesn't have to be said. Whatever we decide we want to do, whether having communication using old-fashioned media or new-fashioned media, whether bringing us together again to meet, bringing us with other people, the resources of this place are available. We have to negotiate and ask for them, but I think there's a sufficient number of us here that we can do that. So the question is, and everybody can travel, the question is, I agree, what's the right next thing? It does seem that if this issue is the most important one, there is a small list of mathematicians and logicians who have thought about this, and they should be involved in a discussion. And I would be surprised if you only listened, but nevertheless, we should hear from them, and we should hear both from, is it Laverne in Buffalo?
Laverne.
Yeah. That we hear say has been thinking about this for some time, and I agree that looks like the next step is to convene.
I'm sort of missing this.
Why
would this issue be very, very interesting? I mean, so far I haven't seen any real evidence that this sort of philosophical questions regarding the nature of maps.
There's
philosophical questions regarding the nature of mathematics have any real impact on the issues. I mean, there's this question of the poison gift, but I don't think that's a very substantive issue. I'm missing the point.
I feel let me say what okay. As soon in all the dynamical theories I know, it is possible to turn off time. And it's possible to turn off time in two ways. One of them is to simply state, here is a configuration, and then here is the space of the possible configurations. And it's possible to turn off time by saying, everything that happens is implicit in the initial configuration.
Okay.
So then in a certain sense, you get this, the world, the four-dimensional reality of space-time just coexists. This is the spatialization of time. I mean, it's the thing that Descartes did when there was an axis which was the spatial axis and there was another axis which is the time axis, and a succession of changes was drawn as something static, making use of one more dimension of space.
So how does this relate to the debate over Platonism versus intuitionism?
What the intuitionists wanted to do, Brouwer and the most ambitious, was to undo what Descartes did and invent a way of describing change in which time could not be undone or erased.
Oh. Okay.
And I think that is at least a strand to start on. Brouwer begot, I know this very badly, Haydn, who eventually reflection on led to very elaborate, unfortunately, the mathematical structures that exist here, like Topos theory, are elaborate and hard to learn. I don't actually understand why they're hard to learn, but I certainly have not succeeded in learning them after several attempts. I don't know, you have the most familiarity with this stuff.
I think it's interesting to discuss, but I would be wary of, I think one can spend an infinite amount of time discussing Platonism and intuitionism and all of
this. But that wasn't the discussion we had in mind.
If we are bringing here the mathematicians, I think we're going to have that discussion.
No. The idea was whether the mathematics of this right-hand column on the blackboard. That's the question.
And either it exists, or it has to be invented.
Okay,
a possible next step is just to find out. Okay. Because clearly there have been good mathematics who were mathematicians who were motivated by the desire to invent something like that. So it would be, we don't have to learn the details, but we can understand what they've done.
I don't. I still don't get how intrinsic logic is, it has anything to do with this. I mean, it's surely it's a different debate, which might involve mathematicians. It might actually involve us thinking mathematically, but. I'm very concerned about what you're saying.
I share Lucy's suspicion here. I think you may be right about Brouwer's motivation, but intuitionism is normally understood as a thesis about constructibility in mathematics, that only constructible, provable propositions are true. And so, I mean, it's not so immediately wedded to questions of temporality.
But it seems to me that's mixing together two different levels here. The issue presented is, what are the mathematics of the right-hand column in the diagram?
Okay,
then there's the second issue of how to pursue that. And what this business about intuitionism is at that second level, it doesn't make, as far as I can see, it doesn't make much sense to anticipate now some fragment of that discussion. We, I have no idea what it is.
Okay.
Yeah,
then I agree with you.
Well, yes, but hang on. To ask what is the mathematics of the right-hand backward, gosh, you might as well be asking, what is the solution? But I think the further question is mathematics posing a part of the problem? And if so, to digress better, what it is about.
Fine, but except that to make the discussion fertile, it would be important to avoid having it degenerate into the debates of the philosophy of mathematics. So it's not just a meta discussion about the antipathy to time in mathematics. It's a discussion about the representation of time in mathematics, given the mathematical tools now available, and what are the limitations of those tools, and what properties would different tools have to have, and so forth. So it's quite a technical discussion, which would acquire its interest by its combination with its general agenda.
But is it really a prior discussion? I mean, does the agenda here depend on whether we can make headways, others can make headways in this question number one? That it be a parallel endeavor, yes, but to think of it as number one, the prior, is giving mathematics a lot of weight in this debate.
But it's not a logical judgment, it's a strategic judgment. That is, taking this whole array of issues we discussed, one has to make a judgment of where the main constraint lies, the main bottleneck to further advance.
One comment that may, I think, bring it home a little bit. Take Penrose's ideas. They're related to the philosophy of mind, but we can take out that connection, I think. What if the right representation of time is not through some geometric representation, but through something like an inferential process, that the only representation of time is what inference is available between one mathematical structure characterizing an instantaneous state of affairs, another mathematical structure characterizing an instantaneous state of affairs. The only connection is one of inference, and that inference is not a computable one.
Is not
computable.
But that's what I was stealing from over there.
Right.
That was Roger's idea.
That would be an illustration of a very radical move in how a different form of representation of time would perhaps have many of the features that are being sorted out.
So it relates to this, but slightly maybe moving the discussion on. So a number of years ago, Chris Fuchs asked me the question, how do you know if there's progress in the foundations of quantum theory, which is my field? And it's a disturbing question because I wasn't able to answer it at the time, and I'm still working on an answer. But I think it's a good question for any field. How do you know if you've actually made progress? So what kind of things would we look? What sort of things would we be looking for as evidence of progress? And one thing would be a richer mathematical structure. I mean, in physics, I think you can start to get fairly confident you've made progress if you predict a number, okay, and that number, and then people go out into a laboratory and measure that number, and it's the same as the one you predicted to some number of decimal places. That's fairly good evidence of progress, and maybe that's in the very long term, that might be the sort of thing we're looking for out of this whole or progress, but maybe other people have ideas of what would actually constitute progress. What sort of things could we actually achieve that would constitute progress?
Are you saying up here, let me see if I'm understanding what the two of you are saying. I think it's related to what I've been saying, okay, and I want to see whether or not it maps, okay. If it's the case that the biosphere and the social world and the technological world have the property that radically new things arise, lungs, hearing, telegraph, television, so on. And if it's the case that we cannot state which kinds of entities are going to arise ahead of time, typically not, then I don't know what kind of mathematics to invent to deal with it. My mind goes utterly blank with confusion. I mean, I've been here for 10 years since I realized this. And I have no idea of how to make some progress here. And I can say what my problem is. My problem is that I know perfectly well how to have a state space. And I know perfectly well how to have states, and I know perfectly well how to have a map that iterates and does something. I'm intrigued by the idea that the inference step is not, in fact, computable. Okay, so that's an interesting move that Roger made. And that's a different move than this problem. This problem is one in which you don't know what the axes are ahead of time. Now, am I right that that's what you're talking about up here?
I think they are separate problems. The problem of emergence in biology is a separate problem than the emergence of particle physics in space, but maybe an important analogy, an important model. The first may be an important analogy, an important model for the second, and the same issue arises. Let me say something which is by way of that and also by way of answering Lucien. In the attempts to make quantum gravity, I don't like to make the statement. I mean, I think we have understood many things. I think we have a plausible scenarios for a possible understanding of the emergence of space, although no good realization. We have pictures of how it might happen.
I thought that that's exactly what we don't have.
We don't have it in detail, but we know what to try to do. Boy, I'm in trouble. Okay. Well, maybe you'll agree with the next statement that I'm going to make, which is that there's a persistent set of technical and conceptual problems that have to do with time, which whatever progress or not we've made about the possible emergence of classical space from quantum structures, we are nowhere on the analogous issues with respect to time. And the... There is a distinction.
I'm not so sure if the understanding of space does really make sense or is reliable without that.
That's fine. That's fair. Okay. There is the possibility that these issues, and by these I mean the ones that motivated this, I mean, you know, the lack of predictability coming out of string theory or any other attempted theory, are somehow all part of a cluster of problems which arise from the fact that we are still treating time through the trick of Descartes and Galileo of having spatialized it. And by spatializing time, we were able to do many things in science. It was a great, brilliant move, but we may have reached its limit. This is a hypothesis.
Okay.
If that hypothesis is true,
then the only route to resolving those problems is to undo the spatialization of time, and therefore to get us out of the, you know, the poison gift, somehow the poison gift of math to science.
But Stewart has issued a very direct challenge. So his challenge is that the mathematical domestication of novelty is a much less promising project than the mathematical domestication of infinity, which occupied 200 years of the history of mathematics. If that is true, it has destructive consequences for our project. So it's vital to know whether it is true. And part of the attempt here is to translate the large and somewhat vacuous idea of novelty into more precise conditions, like the ones listed on the right-hand side of the blackboard, and then to see how they lend themselves to both mathematical and causal treatment. And that seems to me to be a very fundamental bottleneck to progress.
Right.
In our discussion.
I think, interestingly enough, just in biology, where I know what I'm talking about, we do wind up with a causal account. Okay. Our problem is A, that roughly speaking, typically we couldn't have said it beforehand, and B, unless there's something in the notion of computer programs for which you do not know ahead of time what they're going to do, you just have to run them. It may be the case that that's the lever that gets us into at least a parallel world. And I guess the repeated references that you're making, to Chris.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a very simple example of that. Maybe the example. You still have this representation of time, as we always have in physical models, that if you just go from one step to the next, and you have a rule that takes you there. Yeah. But even there, you cannot get time out of the problem in the sense that you cannot say what will happen in any sense about the system unless you just follow the trajectory of that particular system. So this is a problem. There are these problems where you still have uncomputability and unpredictability even about, you can't even say that you don't, that you know what you don't know, or you don't know, you cannot predict that it will be predictable or unpredictable. So it seems that there are a bunch of different problems, not just one problem. And I think the problem that Stewart is talking about is sort of related to all of them, but it's sort of worse because you guys can talk to each other about your problem with time, and Stewart just draws a blank, and so do I. Okay, there's just nothing to discuss, right?
I've been drawing a blank for a decade. It really frustrates me. You know, there's some other issue. At this late hour, with only 10 minutes to go, let me throw out something else that I find myself getting to in investigations. The universe has gotten increasingly complex, okay, since the Big Bang. I tried to define this notion of the adjacent possible that Lee was referring to yesterday. I don't think we know, let's see if I can say this, that the universe keeps moving into an adjacent possible, and you can try to talk about the dimensionality of the adjacent possible. And
adjacent possible.
Yeah, so for a chemical reaction system here, it is, if you've got a bunch of chemicals, in a system. The adjacent possible is those reactions that you can carry out to make molecules that are one step away.
Yeah.
And the biosphere has been expanding into the adjacent possible for 3.8 billion years.
Yeah.
And we don't have a goddamn theory about it.
Where it stops.
Okay? Where it stops, where it's going. We don't know how to talk about it and so on. But biological evolution has been expanding into an adjacent possible. Technological evolution has been expanding into an adjacent possible. We know it every time we go to a venture capitalist and try to raise money, right? I mean, people deal with this all the time. But we don't seem to have a way of mathematizing it. I have the intuition that what's happening is that the rate of advance into the adjacent possible is increasing. That is to say, that what's happening is that we are growing the space, sort of the workspace.
That makes sense because the surface increases.
Right. Somehow the surface is increasing, Peter. Okay. In some lobulated, god awful, fractal way. Right. Yeah, and also the way that it increases is going to have frontiers and salients that just sort of go out that way for a while. And I'm wondering, for example, whether there's laws that govern this advance into the adjacent possible. We can't mathematize it. Okay. I don't know how to mathematize it.
We might be able to.
Oh, that'd be great, Lucien. I mean, if one could try to.
Isn't this something that Bayesians have looked at? Some of their areas at a conference a few weeks ago, and people were talking about the same question of not having a preset configuration space.
Oh, really?
Configuration space. And I think Bayesians, or I forget what they call themselves, maybe radical Bayesians, or I can't remember the term, maybe you know about this, have actually thought about this and tried to think of ways of mathematizing.
So they don't have well described priors.
I pretty much don't think I know about the I mean, there's a guy here, Matt Leifer, who's been thinking about those things.
Uh-huh.
He's a postdoc at the Broker Institute at UMass.
Oh, right.
Be able to point towards that. But I think we could try that. And I don't see why you couldn't, in principle, mathematize. I mean, just because you don't know in advance what these new elements to your configuration space actually correspond to. I still think you could mathematize it, and then you assign their actual physical meaning subsequently. I don't know. I mean,
maybe.
I'm just trying to imagine how you would go forward.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If you could do so, to bring it back to the math question, would you not have something which would have the structure where there would be a succession of true properties,
mm-hmm.
or assertions that at each stage where you can construct your next stage of the configuration space can be demonstrated true or false. You have something which grows out like mm-hmm. a tree, where mm-hmm. time is the growth going outward.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a structure like an intuitionistic logic where you're unable, except by following the system into the future, to give truth value to any statements about the future.
Mm-hmm.
But once made, statements have stability. They remain. Once a statement has a truth value, it remains having a truth value.
You're right. Reasonable. I think so. In the Bayesian context, I think you would use Bayesian inference to assign degrees of belief rather than truth values mm-hmm. per se.
Right.
And those would end up corresponding to properties, so that they would have some kind of empirical significance.
Yeah. So
but this is all.
And a virtue of that is noticed that with respect to this thing that I keep babbling about, as I mentioned, the frequency interpretation of probability,
mm-hmm.
that makes any sense. But you can still have beliefs.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So let me make an attempt to wind up. We began with Roberto's question, so direction of agenda and by what instrument? So I think we have a direction. We have a priority and a direction for agenda. I don't hear anybody saying no.
You want to say what it is?
But could I ask one more question? Just as an example, because I don't know what debates are mature or not mature within physics and cosmology. Is this discussion that we had this morning about facticity and supervenience an ongoing discussion within physics and cosmology?
Not in those terms.
So, all I've said, well, there is a discussion, of course, I take it there is a discussion about the arbitrariness of the parameters or of the constant order, but it's not ordinarily related to the problem of supervenience or emergence of the laws. But it could be, right? Because that's another way, and that's just an example of a long list of topics that one could take as wedges in which from some unfamiliar perspective you go into the discipline in a way that relates it to the problems about time and the transformation of the laws.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a kind of a paradox in this, if you're saying, Lee, that we've adopted, you know, this one first theme when so many themes have emerged in this conversation. I mean, if you're talking about emergence, there has to be, to me, a spirit of emergence in the very discussion and conversation we're conducting. And I would have thought that at such an early stage, maybe not in your own thinking or individuals thinking about this, decades, Stuart keeps on referring to decades, or you've been, you know, confused or not confused or whatever, but the conversation is new, and the question you're asking is, you know, how to create this more productive, then I would imagine that a perimeter sub-website that would be called, you know, whatever, evolving law project, with many subcategories where people can post their most recent papers that has something to do with it, but with the obligation of a little abstract which tells the rest of the group how that might or might not be relevant to other fields, what are the big questions, whatever. Here's what I'm thinking about. Here are the 3 points in this paper where I could really do with insights from other fields, whatever, something like that, to create that immersion, that sense of movement, you know, rather than focusing, saying, okay, this is our priority, the mathematics, which is, you know, why not? But you don't know that yet, whether that's a fruitful avenue or not. So
let me embrace that as a contribution, as part of by what instrument, and let me solidify that proposal. I mean, this meeting has been recorded. I'm told it's done well. Notes have been taken. If nobody objects, it will, within a finite amount of time, there will be a website where the documentation of this meeting will be, and it can become the website that you're speaking about, requiring only somebody to supervise maintaining it. And if you would like to volunteer, or anybody else would like to volunteer, we just need to make an arrangement with the people who run the website here. So,
what do you need? What do the maintenance person do? Hmm? What does somebody need to maintain?
Posting who has permission to post these papers, who has.
But I'm setting it up.
Yes, and we have professionals here who do that. And part of their job is to do things like this. And we've already agreed that the tapes from this meeting will be made available, and there will be some organization by who's speaking or topic, so it's not just 10 hours that somebody can pick and choose among them and so forth. And I'm not making any promises as to date, but we're talking weeks and months. That's what these people are paid to do. So there will be such a website, and let's keep people informed about it. And the idea of picking a sort of next thing. So I was feeling this out as kind of like not closing off other things by any means, but finding something. I mean, I went back last night and I tried to write down, you know, major themes and coincidences, different ways of talking about the same thing, which appeared in several ways. And but I think it's useful to go away with a next thing. And I agree it doesn't address all the issues and agendas as strongly as it addresses some of them, but it's something. So that's a proposal. For the instrument, so let's make this website, let's talk about a next gathering, and I at least would like to reflect on the format, participants, and so forth, who we add, and so forth. The venue can always be here, but it could also be other places if there's interest. Or opportunity. Of course, it goes without saying that the purpose
of meeting and talking is to provoke ourselves singly and in collaboration to real intellectual work and creativity. And so this becomes an envelope for that. And I certainly feel very provoked, especially to the extent that the most provoking thing is that these are not new themes, in the sense that various of us have been aware of these kinds of questions and issues for some time. It's more a question of being provoked to do things that you've postponed, which is maybe the best kind of thing. So that is, at any rate, what I will do. I will reflect and talk to everybody about a next gathering. I will make sure that a web page gets made. And I will try to give some thought to that, and to how to invent. And maybe I would sincerely hope it does not involve mathematics of the complexity of what I've seen in Topos theory. Maybe there are simple ways to state it, and maybe also just coming on to what Simon said, I mean, maybe there's something between mathematics and, you know, maybe another distinction to be a nun is this distinction between the language by which we discuss what the objects are and the mathematical structure online. And maybe the source of the problem is that we separate those too much.
Lee, can I really say something?
Please.
It's at the latest possible hour, and it's sort of a new topic, but it's not, I've just realized. If you think of a river, one of the stunning things about a river is that it makes its own riverbed. And the riverbed changes because the river changes, and then the riverbed constrains where the river flows. If you think in social theory, and there's two people here who know a lot more about it than the rest of us, Roberto and I were talking yesterday about what the law is, and what you said, Roberto, is very striking, because what you said was, law is how the institutions and people and so on get on with one another in doing the activities that they do. That's the thing that you didn't say. I'm reminded of the fact that you cannot write a good sonnet unless you have the constraints of the sonnet formed. Okay? That is to say, in this whole flow into the adjacent possible, whereby the universe has gotten complex, at all sorts of levels there are constraints that arise on how matter, energy, information, process flows to create the next things that arise. And there is a whole story to be had, or to be puzzled about what constitutes those constraints on what arises. I don't know how to mathematize that either. But for example, Roberto, the laws themselves, I mean, just think of the notion of a contract as an enabling constraint. If you didn't have a contract, people couldn't enter into agreements with one another that allow activities of all sorts to take place, because you got the constraints of a contract. Okay? And there's something to be developed here, it seems to me, that's very deep, that has to do with the fact that constraints built by the system itself allow the activity to happen that then builds something new and out there. Now, I don't know how that ties in with everything, Lee. I'm pretty sure that it's an important topic, and I kind of wonder what it has to do with without a metal law, nevertheless laws arise. That direct what happens. I don't know that that's true, of course. But this thing about constraints on what happens and the building of constraints on what, if work is the constrained release of energy, then the work is done to build the constraints on the release of energy, and propagates. And it's this whole thing of not having a theory of the organization of process, which is lying before us in a befuddled mess. It's a fuddled mess, and I'm a befuddled observer of it.
That's what I tried to convey yesterday with the image of the dam. And saying that, in fact, that's how I understand the liberal agenda in political theory. It's exactly about what are the optimal constraints that are empowering and enabling, which is part of Roberto's agenda, but there's a whole issue about the connection between liberalism and radicalism and how much it empowers, which is a whole other debate. But I totally agree that, you know, I mean, and I was thinking that this is definitely a connecting notion.
Well, I would argue that if you want to make progress, that you need, you know, people who have talents other than necessarily the ones that are here. And part of the problem is that the people who have the mathematical, physical talents don't know the nature of the problems that you're discussing. I have yet to understand what you mean by the strong meta law of Marxism, okay? Just to give an example, okay? And I think that what will, it won't come from kind of some formal mathematical philosophical discussion. Because these things, as far as I can tell, have historically not really been very successful. What comes from is sort of looking at the nature of the problem. So what I think would be helpful would be to have people who are trained in mathematics listen, not talk, but listen to people talk about what they, how they see things, in two sentences, but let's be careful. Let's be give an undergraduate lecture and get the basic points across, because I think there's a sort of a vacuum. But we all speak to ourselves, okay? I mean, I can sort of understand you some of the time, but I cannot, you know,
but
I want to, but I don't.
We had this discussion before about the perspective from within and from without and so forth. My experience in academic meetings is at the end of the meeting, people get around and say, well, what can we do next? But another perspective is, what does reason mean, or what does humanity need? And one thing we might need is to replace us by someone else. And then we would assist these other people. So I think it's an interesting argument to abstract from our own proclivities and just imagine what is the most promising strategic next step, independently from who we are and what we can contribute. And then we'll define that, and then if we can contribute something to this higher order of being, we'll do so. And if we can't, we'll resign ourselves to our insignificance.
I know. I agree. And there are a very few instances of counterexamples where philosophical critical discussion has changed the direction of physics. The most prominent I know about is Mach, who wrote a very critical book of criticizing Newtonian mechanics on the grounds of what we now call Mach's principle. And Einstein came a few years later, misread that book, because the historical evidence is that Einstein's understanding was a misreading. But somehow picked up through that misreading a core of an argument that has been going from Leibniz through basically the philosophical literature and invented general relativity. There would be no greater, not everybody gets to be Einstein, there would be no greater purpose in life than being a good version of Mach.
But that didn't happen in a vacuum. There were also a number of observations that Einstein was aware of. Okay, so, I think that the observations and sort of understanding like different sorts of problems that fall outside of our normal paradigm, being exposed to them, maybe this is not the right group, but other people, is very important to making progress.
Because I agree with what Maya said, and I also don't really understand what's going on in social science. So could I ask this question to you two? Can you think of some instance of what would constitute progress in academic social science? Can you give an example of what might constitute progress, or some example of what did in the past? And I don't think you want to predict a number to 10 decimal places and then it turns out that's correct. I think it's something else that you're looking for. But what kind of thing is it?
Well, but there's no way to answer that question without stating one's position in the debate of contemporary social thought. And so it leads us in a completely different direction.
You can't give an instance.
Well,
sort of thing
there's a fundamental debate between positivists and constructivists in that whether or not we are at all looking for predictions and patterns, and even just whether we're looking for laws, let alone meta-laws. I mean, you know, Marx is dead. And, I mean, so
but you gave it
the status of law in social science is a huge topic.
I mean, you gave at the beginning, I think, was it, well, yesterday, it must have been this example of democracies don't go to war as one thing that seems to be true. I mean, do you want more of that kind of thing, or less, or is it just some? I don't understand what it is.
As Roberta's saying, there would be a subset of people who would and a subset of people who wouldn't.
It's not so you really can't answer that question.
But I agree. I think part of the issue is that every field should be, in the debate, should be able to tell the others, this is what is at stake. This is how we need help.
Right.
Or not.
So I haven't understood that yet.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that I would also very, very much like for future discussion. I'm reminded some people have to leave. Those of us who stay will go on after lunch. Thank you very, very, very much. Thank you, Roberta. You came a lot.